You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rotten Bellville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Ross Bellville.
Hey, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, it is Wednesday, June 3rd, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Man, what a great day today at the U.S. Congress. Out there on Capitol Hill, we got not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, but seven federal drug war victories. Seven people. I know. It's pretty stunning. We're going to go through those in behind the headlines today. I take a look at the seven different amendments to the Science, Justice, and Commerce Appropriations Bill that passed yesterday and early today that severely restrict the Department of Justice and by extension the DEA's ability to go after states that are trying to regulate cannabis in one form or another. We also had the DEA's budget. Well, they're saying it's slashed, but really it's only took a 1% hit. But still, you know, a 1% hit on the DEA budget ain't nothing to sneeze at when they've got a $2.3 billion budget. We'll tell you where that $23 million of money is going to, and I'm telling you, it is some causes that are far better than eradicating marijuana plants. I'm just so excited about this. All the drug reform organizations have been pumping out press releases all day about this, these amazing victories. I'm telling you, the pendulum has swung, at least in the U.S. House, with regards to the war on drugs. Now, we didn't get one of the amendments we wanted. It was one that my representative, Earl Blumenauer, had proposed along with Jared Polis from Colorado. We didn't get one out of eight, but hey, I'll take seven out of eight on Capitol Hill any day. Also coming up on the show today, we are bringing you more from the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar, and I'm telling you, you got to listen to this one. Superstar criminal defense attorney Jerry Goldstein, he delivered his annual federal important marijuana cases from the Supreme Court and the federal district courts, everything you need to know about the latest standards at the federal level when it comes to searches and drug dogs and so on. So you will get so much information out of this presentation. We're going to play that throughout the second half of this hour and the first half of next hour. So you'll get the best from one of the finest legal minds in the country and a pretty funny guy too, got to tell you that. Also, in hour two, we'll have our Daily Toker tune, some Irie Wednesday music from France. But we start everything off today with the 420 Radio News. And in the headlines today, we got a new poll out of the state of Arizona on marijuana legalization. We got concern in Ohio from employers who are fearing legalization. In Delaware, they are turning the corner on decriminalization of marijuana. The state of Oregon also is looking at the battle between industrial hemp and medical cannabis, and we got plenty more coming up on the news as well. Plus, in hour two, in our second half hour, we'll take your calls at 84420 Radio, and we'll also discuss the rest of the stories of the day. Don't forget, we need your support here at 420 Radio. We are independent marijuana media, and you can help us by becoming a VIP. Just go to 420radio.org/VIP and sign up for an easy monthly deduction via PayPal. Your support for our mission means we can bring you more exciting content from more places around the country and around the world. We're back with the 420 Radio News right after this.
To the Russ Bellville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green. Come join the fun at the CannaCon Expo, the nation's largest cannabis marketplace for products, services, and ideas. CannaCon is where the cannabis industry does business. CannaCon is coming to the Colorado Convention Center in downtown Denver, kicking off Thursday, June 11th through Saturday, June 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org. That's CannaCon, CannaCon.org. If you're looking for the best deals on growing gear and the most innovative products in the market, don't miss CannaCon. CannaCon will provide you with the opportunity to meet and do business directly and most affordably with the grow gurus and suppliers. CannaCon seminars are designed to be informal, open, and an educational conference where growers, processors, retailers, suppliers, and consultants can frankly discuss issues that impact this thriving industry. Don't miss CannaCon coming to the Colorado Convention Center June 11th through Saturday the 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org.
Hey, this is Big Daddy. I want you guys to join me at the Funky Roller Ring right here on 420 Radio. It's like the groove in Soul Town, smashed together with a greasy pork sandwich on the side, baby.
Two hot dogs and a strawberry soda.
Funky Roller Ring.
Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum. Elegance and sophistication concentrated.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Melville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2015. A new poll from the Behavior Research Center discovered that a slight majority of Arizonans favor ending the prohibition on marijuana. Results from the Rocky Mountain poll released Wednesday indicate 53% popular support for legalizing small amounts of marijuana for personal possession and use. A total of 39% are opposed to the idea. The campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol, backed by Marijuana Policy Project, would allow users over the age of 21 to be able to purchase up to an ounce of marijuana from licensed dispensaries. A 15% tax would direct revenue to regulation costs and public health education. Specific cities would still have the discretion to ban sales of the drug. If the initiative receives 150,000 signatures from registered voters, it will qualify for the ballot in November of 2016. Arizona is home to two competing legalization campaigns. The second, called Arizonans for Mindful Regulation, is run by dispensary owner Jason Medar, who filed paperwork last week to authorize signature collection for a separate initiative. Their proposal allows possession of up to 12 marijuana plants, while MPP's proposal only permits 6. Language in a proposal to amend Ohio's constitution and legalize sale, use, and possession of marijuana in the state has employers antsy over the impact it could have, despite a legal analysis that says they will retain strong workplace control. The amendment's backers said they sought to protect employers, writing in language stating businesses should not have to accommodate use of marijuana products in the workplace. But a provision that appears to provide an exception for patients certified to use medical marijuana has stirred questions that one legal expert suggests might not be cleared up without court rulings. There is growing expectation that an issue backed by Responsible Ohio will land before voters in November. The petitioners have already collected well over the 305,000 or so signatures they will need to get on the ballot. Delaware House lawmakers on Tuesday approved legislation that would treat simple marijuana possession and personal use by adults like a traffic violation, replacing criminal penalties with civil fines. The bill passed the House by a 24-14 vote and now heads to the Senate. Governor Jack Markell supports decriminalization. No House Republicans voted in favor of the legislation on Tuesday. Some opponents said decriminalization would embolden drug dealers operating in a black market. Others say it could prevent police from initiating important searches on suspicion of simple marijuana possession. The legislation would only impose $100 civil fines on adults found with up to an ounce of marijuana or those found using the drug privately. Police could still confiscate the drug when imposing a civil penalty. Oregon lawmakers are considering a bill that would temporarily halt hemp production and force the state's first hemp farm near Grants Pass to yank its plants out of the ground, albeit with compensation from the state. The bill would also put stricter controls on hemp in areas of the state such as southern Oregon, where marijuana farms are plentiful. Marijuana growers say they worry that pollen from hemp farms could wreak damage on prized female cannabis flowers, cross-pollinating them and producing a seedy crop with weaker THC. The legislation, contained in proposed amendments to House Bill 2668, has infuriated the state's small number of hemp farmers who say they are threatened with being shut out of the best growing areas in the state. Seth Crawford, an Oregon State University marijuana policy researcher, says he's heard concerns from some growers that the hemp farms are a form of, quote, biological terrorism, end quote. Although Alaska voted in favor of legalizing marijuana in November, it was still up to individual towns to decide whether or not the possession of cannabis for any adult at least 21 years old would be legal. Monday night, the North Pole City Council met to decide the fate of marijuana in Santa Claus's hometown, and Santa Claus himself showed up to weigh in. A North Pole resident, whose legal name is Santa Claus, showed up at the North Pole City Council meeting and dropped his 2 cents. Quote, "I am a medical marijuana patient," Claus continued. Quote, "I would like to have access to medical marijuana here in North Pole and not have to travel to Fairbanks to get it," end quote. Eventually, an ordinance to ban marijuana dispensaries by Councilwoman Sharon Hunter was voted down 5-2. Claus could not be reached for further comment. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
Radio. Tune in, turn on, get high, educated.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
NARML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines, where the U.S. House has voted to slash the DEA's budget to protect the medical marijuana states and to end the data collection program. Folks, what we've experienced over the past 24 hours in the U.S. Congress, in my 10 years of marijuana law reform activism, has got to be our greatest victory day ever. The tide is really turning here, and this is bipartisan support that we're getting for ending the war on drugs. Now, I don't know how much of this has to do with Michelle Lenhart and the DEA getting caught literally with their pants down at the sex parties. I don't know how much this has to do with people's reaction and understanding about mass incarceration and the conflagrations that have happened in Ferguson and Baltimore and so forth. I don't care. Whatever it is, it's having an impact, and the federal lawmakers have sat up and taken notice. I call it we beat up the DEA and stolen their lunch money, basically. This is just such a fantastic day. I'm so excited. Now, what this is all concerning is the 2016 Commerce, Justice, and Science Appropriations Bill. That's the bill that funds the Department of Justice. And of course, the DEA is part of the Department of Justice. Okay, so here's what we got. 7 out of 8 amendments that were proposed passed in our Congress. The first one was the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment. This is that states' rights to medical marijuana amendment. It means that no federal funds can be used by the Department of Justice, that would include the DEA, to interfere with state medical marijuana laws. Now, they just passed this thing last year. This is the first time it ever passed, and it passed 219 to 189. This year, it passed 242 to 186. So it's gathered another, 20 or so votes to protect states' medical marijuana laws. Now, as Runaround in the chat room notes very astutely, this passed last year, and yet the DEA is still doing raids. In fact, they just did a raid in North Lake Tahoe yesterday. So they don't believe the Department of Justice is actually acting renegade here. These U.S. attorneys that are authorizing these raids, they don't believe that the Congress's bill applies to them. They don't believe that that prohibition on spending money to go after state legal medical marijuana really applies to them. Dana Rohrabacher, the author of the amendment, had to rebuke them and say, no, this applies to you. They're not the ones breaking the law. You're the ones breaking the law by raiding them. Now, how far that goes, we have yet to find out, but at least this battle is now happening. A new amendment was passed. This was the Perry Amendment, passed 297 to 130. This is states' rights to medical cannabidiol. So similar to the ones protecting the medical marijuana states, the 23 medical marijuana states, this one protects the now 15 states that have those CBD-only laws. And again, DEA is prevented from spending money and interfering with those laws. And the Bonamici-Massey Amendment. Bonamici, Susan Bonamici is a representative here in Oregon. Her amendment is the state's rights to industrial hemp. This one passed 282 to 146, and it forbids the DEA, Department of Justice, from spending any money interfering with state hemp laws. So that trio of amendments protect almost every cannabis law at the state level in America. Now, there was another amendment. My representative, Earl Blumenauer, and Representative Jared Polis from Colorado tried to get an amendment passed that would protect recreational marijuana states from federal interference. That one failed. It went down 206 to 222. But it was the first time it was ever tried. And to only lose by, 14 votes, 16 votes? To only lose by 16 votes isn't much. We're talking about recreational marijuana in the Congress. Now, there were also 3 amendments that were passed to take money from the DEA and redirect it elsewhere. $9 million was taken directly from the DEA's cannabis eradication budget, you know, ripping up weeds in the forest. That budget was reduced $9 million and redirected to youth programs, victims of child abuse, and deficit reduction. That was the Lew Amendment. It passed by a voice vote. Another $10 million was taken from the DEA's salaries and expenses to help equip police with body cameras. This was the Castro Amendment, and it passed by a voice vote. And another $4 million was taken from the DEA's budget to fund the testing of backlogged forensic rape kits. This one was offered by Representative Steve Cohen out of Tennessee, and it also passed by voice vote. And the Polis-Griffith Amendment also passed by a voice vote. This was the ending of bulk collection of our telecommunications records. You know, we told you that story a few months back about the DEA's practice of parallel construction. This is where they'd use all the metadata that the NSA and the CIA and the FBI, all these federal agencies collect in the name of the war on terror. All of this mass warrantless wiretapping that they're pulling out all this information up. The DEA would use that information to give tips to local law enforcement on a drug case and then launder any evidence that the mass federal data collection was involved in the local tip. And that robbed defense attorneys of an important strategy in trying to defend their clients from these local drug charges that actually came from federal tips. That was ended by voice vote as well.
I can't do reefer comedy. I'm drunk. Two different animals.
Speaking of reefer comedy, make sure you join us on Monday nights at 8 p.m. We got a new show, Totally Hilarious Comedy. That's right, THC. We play stand-up comedy, interview comedians, play novelty tunes and parody music. We also have an artist focus. That's every Monday night at 8 p.m. with Totally Hilarious Comedy. When we come back, we've got Legalization Law and Order featuring a special Jerry Goldstein on important federal decisions.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization.
Yeah, come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Whether it's a vape pen, a pipe, or a bong, you can find it right now on weedshop.com. We got dab rings, nails, and ship it fast. Whipping any of a competitor's glass. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Shop.com.
Hey, I'm Herb Thrasher, host of the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, live every Friday night at 8 Pacific. Tune in for 2 hours of metal marijuana mayhem featuring exclusive interviews with the latest bands, highlights of live shows, and the latest in marijuana news. It's the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, Friday nights at 8 p.m. at 420 Radio, or catch the replay on Saturday nights.
Get.buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
In the marijuana law reform movement, the cannabis community is represented by thousands of dedicated defense attorneys fighting to end prohibition and keep us free. The Russ Belville Show visits with the tireless courtroom crusaders in our Legalization Law and Order.
All right, today you get a very special treat. Jerry Goldstein is one of the great marijuana attorneys and criminal defense attorneys out there, known for defending very high profile clients, including Manuel Noriega, of all people. Enjoy his presentation on latest federal court decisions.
Thank you all.
At 2 o'clock.
Yeah. I can finish this up. And easily an hour and 45 minutes, so don't worry about this. You'll get to Owl Farm. We're going to be talking about the Supreme Court primarily today, and so let's get on with it, because we're going to be talking about what's hot and what's not. And quite frankly, there's a lot of shit that's not. This is an interesting court. We talk about this every year, but this court is probably the most conservative court we have had in half a century. It prefers basically the government over the individual, big business over the government normally, but there's been some interesting coalitions. So let's go ugly early. Fourth Amendment. That's actually a bad high school joke about how to get laid. We're going to start with Hine. Hine was argued, by the way, it was the first case argued this term. And it was the first criminal case decided. It was argued by Jeffrey Fisher, who successfully argued Crawford, the same year, had two cases at 34 years old that he won in the Supreme Court of the United States in the same term. He won Riley versus California, our cell phone case that we're going to talk about. But in this case, he obviously spurred the Chief Justice to explain that ignorance of the law is an excuse so long as you're a cop. That's really, I think. And by the way, you know, we know that good faith works when it's with respect to a warrant under Leon. That was the idea, was to place, you know, the detached magistrate in the middle. We know from Michigan versus DeFilippo that, in fact, a statute later held unconstitutional, an officer can rely in good faith upon that. And we're going to talk about Davis for a few minutes, that he or she can rely upon in good faith settled law in their jurisdiction. The issue in Hine was whether they could rely in good faith upon a fucking mistake of the law. And the idea was, well, we've always allowed good faith when it's a factual mistake, but shouldn't the law be the law? I mean, what do we have to do? Remember I've actually gotten charges in federal court. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. That's the adage that we as citizens have to live with. Robert says, well, they can rely on a mistake of law if, one, the statute is ambiguous. In this case, don't forget, Nicholas Hine is riding along in North Carolina in Surry County, and he's got a broken right taillight. And the Supreme Court of North Carolina ultimately decides you only need one fucking taillight in North Carolina. So the officer had obviously arrested him for something that wasn't against the law. And secondly, the misinterpretation of that ambiguous statute must be reasonable. I guess that's where the good faith comes from. So, by the way, it's an 8-1 decision. Breyer joins in the Chief Justice's opinion. Kagan and Ginsburg said, we're all in. We just want to argue about whether or not it has to be an objective mistake. Sotomayor, the only sitting justice who actually was a lawyer, unfortunately, a fairly aggressive prosecutor, and a district judge. Bob Fogelnesson, by the way, she's a lone dissenter. We tried her first criminal case, the Spy Factory case in the Southern District of New York. Here's the issue. Is this up to what the officer believes is the law? Can we cross-examine them as to what their idea of the law? Well, actually, we know this too well from Wren, and I noticed in Ed Milet's speech, you know, the officer, well, they had an evil motive in stopping him. Roberts, the Chief Justice, says, doesn't fucking matter. The officer's subjective understanding of the law is irrelevant. And Kagan makes that very clear as well in her concurring opinion. What happened to the idea that the exclusionary rule was supposed to deter evil-minded people from invading our constitutional rights? We now know that ignorance of the law, it's no excuse for a citizen to be ignorant of the law, a citizen charged with obeying the law, but it is an excuse for those charged with enforcing the law, including the supreme law of the land.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
This is Willie Nelson for Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane.
With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Welcome back, everyone. More of Jerry Goldstein at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar, continuing his rundown of important federal case decisions that impact our Bill of Rights. Listen closely. Lots of really good information coming your way.
Sotomayor says, look, courts, not officers, ought to be and are in the best position to decide issues of law. Departing from further from this tradition means further eroding those constitutional rights that have already been worn down substantially by this court. Okay, now to something hot that 1 month ago, by the way, the Supreme Court decided Rodriguez. How many of y'all are familiar with Rodriguez? Interesting case, because what the court says is that detaining a traffic stop, a motorist, for 7 to 8 minutes to bring a drug dog over constitutes a search. It's a seizure. It involves the Fourth Amendment. Dennis Rodriguez is driving along, by the way, and I think he had expired tags. The officer holds him. And by the way, it's a canine officer. Officer Stubble has Floyd, his canine, in his car. He just wanted backup for somebody to be watching him, so he waited for the backup. But what if he had brought the car over? We know that the Supreme Court has already told us that as long as it doesn't prolong the stop, they can do whatever the fuck they want. They can jerk off on the side of the road, and that's okay. I'm just relating back to Abe's eloquent speech on blowjobs. And I agree, they do reduce tension. Interesting, by the way, 6-3 decision in Rodriguez. Roberts, Scalia, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, in an opinion written by Ginsburg, I don't know what Kennedy's thinking, but he's along with the usual suspects, Thomas and Alito, dissenting. It's interesting the way they define it, because if you listen to the oral argument, it was a public defender trying to hold his water, and he's sitting there, and they're bitching about, well, what if the officer takes too long to write the ticket, or he's a fast ticket writer? You know, what's the, and by the way, the dissent, Thomas talks about the fact, well, an officer that's a fast ticket writer ought to have more leeway, you know, because, and what they say is that the detention becomes Fourth Amendment gains Fourth Amendment importance when the task tied to the traffic stop, the underlying traffic stop, have either been accomplished or should have been accomplished. So the officer can't just delay giving the ticket. And by the way, there's a lot of shit that goes on that they say is incident to the stop. You can have a driver's license check. You can check registration and insurance. There's a warrant check, which is interesting because they say, but a dog sniff is different. It doesn't relate to the traffic stop, to the underlying offense. You're looking for general criminal investigation. Well, what the fuck? A warrant check probably goes well beyond the traffic stop, too. But that's one of the noted exceptions in the opinion. The way they talk about the critical question is not whether the dog sniff occurs before or after the ticket is given, but whether it prolongs or adds time to that stop. So that's a decent standard. But by the way, they remand it back to the North Carolina District Court to decide whether or not there was a reasonable suspicion of other criminal activity. We know where that's liable to go.
Jerry?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to comment on that because I researched that issue.
Yes.
In fact, the magistrate judge in the lower court ruled that the officer did not have any reasonable suspicion to prolong the detention. The district court adopted the magistrate court's finding,
but made no specific finding with respect to that.
And the decision never went to the Court of Appeals, and I think the Supreme Court remanded it back to the Eighth Circuit, didn't they?
They did, and it will go back down. But that will be another factual determination. And by the way, that's a mixed question, and like probable cause is one that the appellate courts can look at de novo. And by the way, it's interesting in Rodriguez because it was terribly important about whether or not there was reasonable suspicion to prolong. It's the same thing that when we talked yesterday about Antoine Jones, you know, he did get retried and they did exclude the evidence. But this is pretty clear because it's clear that the stop is where the evidence came from. In other words, if you can, if the stop was, the detention was illegal, we're going to get there from here. So that's going to be the issue in Rodriguez when it gets reheard. Let's talk and let's go back to something we've covered over and over again, but I think it puts into perspective some other recent cases. What about those cases that Hudson, Herring, and Davis that are so troubling to many of us? Remember, Hudson, this is the first case out of the box after we got a new Chief Justice and Alito are on the bench. It's written by Scalia, but in it, Scalia tells us we've never held that evidence is the fruit of the poison tree simply because it would not have come to light but for the illegal actions of the police. We have never held that? The fuck have I been doing for 50 years? This is what I've... You know, I teach at law schools. That was what we used to teach each other. Well, 3 years later, the court comes across, and naturally, the Chief Justice writes the opinion this time. It's another 5-4 scorcher. And in this case, citing Scalia's language, he reminds us, hey, look, suppression is not the automatic consequence of the fact that they obtained evidence illegally. The question turns rather on the culpability of the police and whether there is a sufficient deterrent to that exclusion will be a deterrent to wrongful police conduct. I hate these cost-benefit analysis. This ballot, these are the toilet bowl tests that courts love. When you hear them say, I'm looking at the totality of this, you can just see a big hand reach up for that cord, pull it down, and all your hopes and dreams are going down the toilet like those little brown things. Think about it. They set up this test. Is it sufficiently intentional to deter, and is it sufficiently culpable to justify the social cost? What are the social costs? Well, they tell us. Allowing the guilty to go free and the dangerous to remain at large. When are we ever going to win that balancing test? That looks pretty heavy-handed to me. 2 years later, the third case in the trilogy, Davis, comes down, and the issue in Davis is whether an officer... The issue... Yeah, well, that too. The issue is whether the officer is entitled to rely upon settled precedent in their jurisdiction, which we spoke of just briefly, momentarily earlier. Alito says, look, if they're acting in good faith, reliance upon what they believe the law to be, then exclusion does not pay its way. Cost-benefit analysis, exclusionary rule dependent upon a balancing test, big hand goes up, chain comes down, all your hopes and dreams. Where did this deliberate, culpable, flagrant concept come from? What happened to the old Scalia? You know, the guy, remember from in the customs agents when they were mucking about in their urine and they wanted to do your analysis of all our customs agents? Think about this. Scalia, citing Brandeis, a descendant of Brandeis, says, it is immaterial that the intrusion was an aid of law enforcement. Experience should teach us to be most on our guard to protect liberty when the government's purposes are beneficent. Men born of freedom are naturally alert to repel invasion of their liberty by evil-minded rulers. The greatest dangers to liberty lurk in insidious encroachment by men of zeal, well-meaning but without understanding. That looks like it excludes good faith reliance upon anything. And he's right. When he said that. But when did well-meaning, beneficent purposes turn into deliberate, culpable lawbreakers? How did we get here? There's a new line of cases that I want to just, we're going to go back here because I think we're seeing an emergence of something that's at least arguably and different. And that is, we're redefining the Fourth Amendment and our rights of privacy. 2 years ago, remember Hardinas? The dog sniff case, and the issue there was whether they brought the dog up onto the guy's front porch and the dog sniffs at the guy's door. The issue there was whether or not, hi dear, I did tell them not to show up tonight or you'd kill them. Thank you. The issue was whether or not this dog sniff at the front door constituted a search. And it's another 5-4 decision, interesting coalition this time. Scalia is joined by Thomas, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Kagan then concurs. She's joined by Ginsburg and Sotomayor. You're going to learn to love these women on Fourth Amendment cases. And then Alito dissents and is joined by Roberts, Kennedy. I don't know what the fuck Breyer was doing that day. But It's another five, and Scalia goes back to an ancient case, Entick versus Carrington, which I love to bring back to y'all. It's written by Lord Camden of the Court of Common Pleas, and goes back to 1765, Scalia's original intent, where and he quotes this in the opinion. Our law holds the property of every man so sacred that no man can set his foot upon his neighbor's clothes, whatever the fuck that is, without his leave. I mean, great language, and what about Scalia's original intent? I mean, when they wrote those words, all men are created equal, they meant it. They were not gender perfect. Women didn't get the right to vote or sit on juries until 50 years after African Americans. Times have changed, and so have we. Don't forget, Thomas Jefferson had slaves. Apparently liked one of them a lot. Scalia gets really into this castle doctrine, like the home is the first among equals in terms of privacy protection. He really focuses on the physical trespass, the castle doctrine. Well, but Frankie the dog's outside the house. How did that intrude on a house paper's effects? Well, remember Rackus, Rawlings, and Salvucci, the trilogy of standing cases where they said we're going to eschew these arcane property doctrines? Well, Scalia comes up with curtilage. We use that in normal terms, don't we? We know what a curtilage is. Fuck, nobody knows what a curtilage is. What they say is it's that area immediately surrounding and put to the same purposes as the domestic use of your residence. Whatever that is. But you can see it with the white picket fence and some clotheslines in the back. But in rural areas, it becomes blurred. And he deals with Oliver and the open fields doctrine very easily. But it's interesting that the majority didn't decide that the dog sniff was a search. What the majority said was that the two Florida Bureau of Investigation officers and Frankie the dog were trespassers on this curtilage. I mean, and he's really into this whole idea. And, you know, when you think about these cases, think about, there's no discussion about whether they were culpable or intentional. Yeah, they intentionally came, brought the dog up to sniff on the dog. They weren't, what was that, flagrant? There's no mention of any of that. In Jones, which is the case that dealt with attaching, that was mentioned yesterday, attaching and monitoring a GPS device on Antoine Jones's pickup truck. Remember, they did get a warrant, but it was in D.C. They executed it in Maryland 10 days after it had expired. And anyway, there are two issues, attaching and monitoring. I don't give a shit about the attaching. We talked about it yesterday. We come equipped with a GPS device. They know what the fuck we are every minute. They don't have to attach it. I'm worried about them monitoring it.
Jerry Goldstein explaining the important federal case decisions on our privacy, our 4th, 5th, 6th Amendment rights, and there's plenty more coming up. So many federal circuit court cases, appeals court cases, and of course Supreme Court cases that affect our civil liberties every single day. It's a good thing we've got attorneys like Jerry Goldstein standing up for us, and all the folks of the Normal Legal Committee. Thanks for inviting me to the Aspen Legal Seminar. We got a third segment of that coming up right after we pay a few bills. You're listening to 420radio.org.
You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
beginning of the end started in 1996 when California legalized weed for so-called medical purposes. 16 years later, Washington and Colorado legalized it outright and let people sell it from storefronts. And what has been the result?
The generation of millions of dollars in tax revenue for the states and creation of hundreds of new jobs in a growing multi-billion dollar industry?
No. Well, yes. But at what cost?
Let's see. The cost of all that police time and money that's now spent going after real criminals and prisons with enough room to hold them all?
No. Well, yes. But look at what it's done to the people.
You mean that fewer of them are dying of alcohol, tobacco, and prescription-related causes since they've switched to cannabis, and many more are receiving medical benefit from a cheap, non-toxic healing herb?
No. Well, yes. Yes. Yes to all of that. But I can smell pot from my backyard. And I can't tell my kids not to do it because it's illegal.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com and follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
All right, for our first hour, our final segment of the Jerry Goldstein presentation on important federal court decisions that impact our civil rights. But stay tuned for hour two. We'll have the rest of these presentations for you as well. You can also pick up the entire thing at soundcloud.com/radicalruss.
Well, it's interesting because Scalia, you know, this is that whole property-based approach. At the bottom, we must assure preservation of that degree of privacy against government that existed when the Fourth Amendment was adopted. As explained, for most of our history, the Fourth Amendment was understood to embody a particular concern for government trespass upon the areas, the persons, the houses, the papers, and effects. He's a literalist, and there's a wonderful book, which we'll talk about later, that talks about how he became a literalist. But again, in Jones, he cites, what, Entek versus Carrington. Going back to Lord Camden's words, by the laws of England, every invasion of private property, be it ever so might, you can't fucking bend my grass or trot upon my soul without that being an affront to me. Well, it's interesting. Scalia's property trespass approach deals with the attachment. It ignores totally the monitoring of that. And what happened to cats? Which, remember this, how many of y'all remember what a public telephone booth looked like? Not many. Superman and Sam Katz probably liked them. Other than that, but the idea there was the monitoring, and the Supreme Court came up with this concept of reasonable expectation of privacy. The Fourth Amendment protects people, not places. What about your property trespass approach? He says, oh no, the expectation of privacy test of deciding whether or not there was a search, it doesn't replace, it's not a substitute for the property trespass. It's an alternative to the physical intrusion concept. So now we got two, if reasonable expectation of privacy wasn't hard enough to figure out to begin with, now we got a two test that we can use. By the way, Alito concurs, and he's joined by Ginsburg, Breyer, and Kagan. And he says, look, how are we deciding a 21st century surveillance case on 18th century tort law? He says, it's almost impossible to think of a late 18th century situation that is analogous to what took place in this case. And he's right. And he talks about the search no longer requires that physical intrusion. For science has brought forth far more effective devices for the invasion of a person's privacy than the direct and obvious methods that of oppression which were detested by our forebears and which inspired the Fourth Amendment. And he talks about them. And he says, look, there's all these new devices, you know, closed circuit. Look at, you know, scenario rep. Remember the, you know, Lord and Taylor had a had every place in London there. Every corner is surveilled. But most cities are because there's surveillance cameras on every commercial enterprise. I mean, how do you think we get to watch if there is a convenience store robbery in Texas anywhere? You're going to get to watch it on the, you know, 5 o'clock news, and it's a surveillance camera. You know, when we're going to talk about Michael Martin for just a second, but when I was, when we were, Cynthia and I were handling that with Barry Scheck, we had to drive through Austin to get to Georgetown, Texas, Williamson County, Texas, and the traffic is terrible. So there was a toll road. Well, I never, you know, I don't do that normally, and I'm fucking on the toll road, and I'm tooling along, and I think, I don't have to stop at these deals, and it was great. And then a month later, I get this bill, and it's got my picture at the wheel with my license plate, and, you know, I get to pay an extra $10 because I didn't stop. And by the way, I'm not even sure most of these there's even anybody there to talk to. By the way, you know, you got OnStar. Every vehicle comes equipped. You know, help me, I'm falling. All of our devices, smartphones, computers, everything, have GPS devices already installed. And, you know, Alito suggests, well, why don't the legislature ought to deal with this. When Olmstead versus New York was decided, Congress enacted Title III, the wiretap statute. Well, that's true, but who wiretaps? We've done this before, but it's pretty obvious. Jealous spouses and cops. Nobody else gives a shit what we're saying, you know. But the idea of marketing having a really interest in everything you do digitally, and they now have these analogs that they're able to tell all sorts. They know when you pee. They know when you jerk off if you're not getting a blowjob. It's a little tougher with the other. But they know everything about it, and it's marketable, and we're going to have a hard time passing that legislation because there's going to be a big push from the big multinational and big retailers who are using this device. By the way, politicians. You know, that's how they work it. And, you know, Alito talks about the CATS test assumed that there was some reasonable expectation of privacy, but expectations change. Convenience, security, you know, the Lord and Taylor camera, the you know, hey, gee, I you like that tune? Maybe you'll like this one. It's not just based on what you just bought. It's based on a profile that they've made of everything you fucking do. And it's out there. Alito, applying the CATS reasonable expectation of privacy test, says that the 3 weeks of surveillance constituted a violation of the Fourth Amendment. The neat thing is, Sotomayor says, I think any, whether short or long, monitoring of that attached device, and she goes into something we're going to talk about a little later, the cops, you know, the third-party doctrine. The GPS is so comprehensive that most people don't think about every time they go to the psychiatrist, these are her words, every time they go to an abortion clinic, every time they, God forbid, see a criminal defense attorney, by the hour motel, a strip club, a mosque, a church, a synagogue, a gay bar, they know your habits, good and bad. And they have the programs that will profile you and give them all sorts of answers. So what we know is, and by the way, Sotomayor says we might need to reconsider this idea of reasonable expectation of privacy. Maybe we need a new definition. Great. We're going to have so many fucking definitions of what constitutes a search. We've already got two. Let's add a third. But she says that people who use a cell phone, they're not thinking about giving up that information, the metadata. They're not thinking about it every time they go on a website that somebody's monitoring that. They're not thinking that every email or text that they send, that's actually going through a third-party provider. Everything you buy is being monitored. That makes 5 votes. At least lengthy monitoring constitutes a search. 2 months ago, the court decided Grady versus North Carolina. Not a terribly interesting case. It involved a probationer, and the question was attaching and monitoring a GPS device to him a search? And what the court said is, look, the monitoring program, they looked and there were 5 votes that monitoring were a search. And they said this is a prolonged device, and that monitoring program constituted a search and a Fourth Amendment intrusion. Not just the attachment, but the monitoring. 5 votes. So, and that's the same Supreme Court that decided Jones. Last term, the cell phone case. Again, Jeffrey Fisher, one of our heroes, who's spoken to this group before. If this was, did they have a right incident to your arrest to search your cell phone? As we know, there's telephone numbers, there's text messages, there's digital images, pictures, photos. There's all sorts. They can track your location. There's all sorts of things that are on our cell phones, and there are many computers, in effect. And this was probably the only really unanimous opinion. Usually, I know people sometimes think that the Chief Justice is trying to find these narrow majorities to divine an approach. This was broad, sweeping language. And the Chief Justice says, look, modern cell phones are not just another technological convenience. With all they contain and all they may reveal, they hold for many Americans the privacies of life. The fact that technology now allows an individual to carry such information in his hand does not make the information any less worthy of the protection for which our founders fought. Our answer to the question of what police must do before searching a cell phone seized incident to an arrest is accordingly simple. Get a warrant. I like that. That's broad, sweeping language from our Chief Justice and unanimous Supreme Court. 2 weeks ago, in U.S. versus Kim, a case out of the District of Columbia, and the case originated out of LAX. Mr. Kim is departing, and they seize his computer, they take it to San Diego, and they search it. And what the court there held is that the governor's plenary border search doctrine, that they can search anything and everything. Look, the common analogy is an address book. The courts are legion that say if you're arrested, they're going to be able to go through your address book. But there's a difference in digital data. Digital is different. We're going to talk about that. But this was after Kim had departed. They didn't search it. It was 150 miles away from LAX, and it was an extensive examination that took weeks. And they said this isn't your routine border search when someone's entering the United States, and they at least talk about the distinction. But what's interesting is they talk about Riley. The Riley court made it clear that the breadth and volume of data stored on computers and other smart devices make today's technology different in ways that have serious implications on the Fourth Amendment analysis. And they talk about the fact that digital devices aren't your ordinary containers. And we're going to have to use this. And I think use it well. And I will tell you the best news. And that is that Jones, the GPS on Antoine Jones's pickup, Hardinas, Floyd the dog sniffing at the door, and Riley, the cell phone case, there's not any mention of some rigorous balancing of interest. There's no mention, not a word about deliberate, not a word about culpable, not a word about flagrant. And not from Scalia, Alito, Sotomayor, Kagan, or the Chief Justice. Perhaps digital really is different. Maybe there are different concerns to these folks about digital information, communications, data, and the old concern about contraband. None of them are really worried about having to run to the toilet and flush the shit. They're worried about the guy or gal sitting next to them knowing what they're doing on their computer. That is a difference, and we need to be cognizant safety conscious with respect to that. One of the things that irks me is this concept of metadata. You know, it's the identity of the caller, it's the numbers called, it's what's on your telephone bill. That's bullshit. It's also the communications themselves. How do you think they came up with Sonariev's conversation with his mom 3 days before the bombing? NSA gave that to them. They had that stuff. And we now know that we have legions of expose where they know the contents of your telephone calls because it's digital. It's not going on a landline. It's not being radio transmitted. It's the same way they get the number and the duration. It's digitally transmitted. And they now, this is a recognition by this Google for voice that the government now is using, and they get this from some of Snowden's papers, they can automatically recognize the content within phone conversations, and it's easily searchable and storable. So we now know they've got a lot of stuff. And by the way, the technology. Remember, our founding fathers were concerned about King George's redcoats coming and busting in their door and going through their underwear drawers. This new electronic surveillance, the new data mining, is more stealth-like. It's more sophisticated. You can't see it, you can't feel it. It doesn't have that Scalia-like trespass approach. And it cuts at the confluence, the crossroads between our Fourth Amendment right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures and our First Amendment rights to free speech, free association, bitch about our government. That's where the rubber meets the road. And perhaps it's more dangerous and more sinister because it's not physical. Perhaps it protects something more valuable than your papers and your effects. because what this technology does is steal your vote.
There you go. Jerry Goldstein explaining how the Supreme Court, the Roberts Court of all things, finding that electronic data is special, that your cell phone just isn't another container. Cops need a warrant to search through it, that your digital data deserves greater privacy protections. Pretty amazing when you recognize that the Roberts Court is, as Goldstein mentioned, one of the most conservative courts we've ever seen. The tide is turning. We've got the Congress voting on our side. We've got the Supreme Court recognizing our rights again. We've got the Freedom Act passing and trying to curtail bits of the USA Patriot Act. It's almost like we're waking up from a long national nightmare. We got more of Jerry Goldstein in Aspen coming up in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll also talk a little bit about the stories of the day and get some daily Toker tunes from France.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
For everyone here at Roller J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.